I remember Sean Ray wrote in the 2010 Junior Nationals on MD, he wrote, you know, he called me like stick legs or something, no legs or something like that. So, you know, you read that shit. And like I said, just things like that. You, a guy like Sean Ray would never say that a guy like me is worth his salt in anything. But I take it and I remember that when I go to the gym and I utilize it. So, I mean, that's part of, you know, just having the you know, the thick skin to, you know, utilize this stuff and push it off, because it can't affect you. The better you get, the more shit people are going to talk, the more they're going to criticize you. You know, I'm sure the people that probably call me fat after they watch this damn freaking podcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Advices Radio and Think Big Bodybuilding Media. Our programming is sponsored by TrueNutrition.com. Thank you, guys, everybody who has been supporting our show and using our code ADVICES. It helps to let True Nutrition know that you support what we're doing. Plus, you guys can get a discount on some high-quality supplements from a great company. Back on the microphone and video with me today is Gary Turner. Gary, what's up, man? We had such a freaking great outcry of feedback in that last episode, the hugest fuck episode we did with you. So thank you for being back with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. And I'm glad everybody liked what I had to say and gave a shit enough to want me back on again.
Dude, we had Gary on. This is maybe a few months ago. I'm going to say September now. We talked all about what it takes, you know, in our series Huge as Fuck, we talk about, you know, what people have done to put on as much muscle as possible, and you're a great candidate to talk to on this topic, Gary. You've put on some incredible mass, and when we caught you last, you said you were going to be going into a cruise around Thanksgiving, if I recall, and then from there, assuming all was well, you were going to start pushing up again. You were in like the mid 290s in there. And I know, I remember you said at the time, like scale weight itself is not, you know, be all end of the world. And whether you weigh 293 or 301, it's not a big difference. You're still big, you know? But I got to ask the number, man. Where are you at today?
Today, I weighed in at 302.
Fuck yeah.
the highest I got. I crossed about, I've been there about 3 weeks now.
Okay.
Over 300, that is. I crossed, and then it was a fight. We had to change the diet around, and we pushed forward. And the highest I got was 307.
Okay.
And I was 305 for a little bit. But if I had to say, and I average, like I'm leveling off right now, I lost a little bit of water retention. My lower back pumps have like subsided a lot, which is great. Because they really sucked, but I'm about I fluctuate between 300 and like 303. I'd say 304 would be a little bit up there right now, but I mean, it's good to have it. I hope that I can hold it here until prep starts, just to see what the big, you know, the big cut down would be. You know, it's like you're going from your peak weight and then down to like your most shredded look. So.
Yeah, it's a lot of weight, man. And I got to say, too, there's something about watching video or looking at pictures that does not convey what a 300-pound human being looks like that's under 6 foot. You know, how tall are you again?
5'8".
5'8", at over 300 pounds now. Like, I'm being honest, you know, I mean, like, I can take a picture and with, you know, the right angles and the right light and a good pump after I eat some McDonald's or something, and I look pretty good in the gym, man, and people be like, oh, dude, you look huge in an Instagram picture. But that is, it's a whole other world being 220 or 200 pounds and looking big to walking around. I want to give people an idea. This is what fucking bodybuilding really is about. You know, is about pushing to that extreme. And listen, man, the last episode you did, I think you really inspired a lot of people to try to push a lot of people that want to grow and put on as much muscle as they can. I feel like you inspired a lot of people and you challenged a lot of people too, because there's a lot of us out there, you know, that like, we want to do everything we can, but I'm not anywhere near 300 pounds. And I have to come to terms with that when Gary Turner's part of the conversation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's you know, it's definitely a challenge. And just to throw out another challenge to anybody like listening, you know, out there right now, since then, my diet right now has changed to probably the most extreme that it's been right now. I mean, about 6,100 calories. That's clean calories a day. There's no like burgers, like daily burgers or anything like that. I'm doing 18 whole eggs a day right now.
That's so what's that last meal look like? I was looking at your diet you posted the other day.
I'm gonna post it tonight when I eat it. You know, because everybody wants to see what it looks like. It's 8 whole eggs. This is the post meal, by the way. Like, I'll train. I'll get done at the gym about 8:30. I'll have a shake with 2.5 scoops of isolate and 60 grams of waxy maize, no fat. I'll go home, shower, wait an hour after that shake goes down, and then I'll have this post meal, about 60 to 90 minutes. That meal is 8 whole eggs, 9 ounces of either London broil or 96% ground beef, and it's lower on the lower carb. We had to lower the carbs a little bit, 6 ounces of yams. So, you know, yams take up a lot of space.
Sure.
You know, for a carb, not unlike rice. It comes out to, I think it's about 30-something grams of carbs. When, you know, 35 grams of carbs for 6 ounces of yams, 8 ounces being about 45, 50. I do the yams only as opposed to rice. One, I can get the meal down fine. You know, it's not that bad. It used to be really bad in the beginning.
What do you
mean?
It
took me 2 hours to eat. It took me 2 hours to eat it once. I had to reheat it twice. I'm just sitting there like fucking hitting the fork on it. I'm like,
yeah.
At some point I blended it, but now I've like acclimated to it. And I just find that, you know, you have to like adapt with it. It's with anything. I say progressive overload, you know, training, progressive eating until there's a threshold. Like, I got a little bit too high in the carbs right now. A little while back, and I told my coach Frank, who's helping me out, I said, hey, we got to pull the carbs back, man. Like, my belly is getting out of control.
Yeah.
And we did, and I felt a little bit. So I noticed the carbs, because that's what we jacked up, and I noticed that, like, I was getting a little sloppy, a little bit too watery, and I'm very watery right now, but I had to pull that back a little bit. I just find that the heavier fat and the protein just does better for me. But I feel like at this point, I'm kind of maxed out. There's like no like magic adjustment. The magic adjustment would be is to put me in a contest prep.
Yeah, okay.
That would be the adjustment at this point. So I'm sitting there and I plan on starting prep like middle of March, definitely by, you know, April 1st, because the shows are going to be middle August and the beginning of September.
Okay.
I like the longer prep. But I'm like, wait, I'm like counting down the days. I'm like, you know, a dog on a chain waiting to like break off, because it's just, one, I know it's the right. I haven't been on stage in like 18 months, and it's also, I'm big and it's like lumbering right now.
Yeah.
So I'm all for the lower food. If you tell me 5 days of cardio, 6 days of cardio, I will do it. I want to do the cardio.
Yeah.
So that's when you know you're ready for this, to get ready for a show. When you're not, when you're dreading it, like, oh shit, man, we got another month until this prep shit starts. That you're not ready at that point. Hmm. Body's probably not going to follow suit. But when you're looking at it like it's Christmas morning coming up, and that's what you're looking forward to,
yeah.
The fat will probably fall off you pretty quick.
So you didn't compete this last year. I know a lot of guys, especially at the national level, they get it in their head. They're like, well, I got to stay in front of the judges. If I'm going to get attention, I have to keep hitting it. But you decided to delay that gratification, and you decided to take longer. How did it feel watching everybody else get in shape for nationals this past November and just be feeling fat, you know?
it was tough. You know, I'm a guy who likes to compete. I like the tan. I like to show up at the show a few days early. You know, the whole family's there. You know, you get up in the morning, it's still dark, you're doing cardio, you got a, you know, a goal in mind. Yeah. I'm somebody who likes the contest prep. I like everything, but I like the contest. So some people don't like the stage at all. They like the lifestyle to live, and that's the extent that it goes. But I'm a guy who likes, you know, everything that comes with the show and waiting backstage and everything like that. So it was tough. You know, it was tough also because I felt a little short at Junior Nationals in 2018. I took 6th there. I felt, you know, that I was, you know, I could have looked a lot better. I made some mistakes. You know, I was a little flat. I think I rushed that prep kind of in terms of I did a show the fall before And then I started prepping a few months later. So that was the lack of rest right there is probably what affected that. And I just was, there are guys that were on that stage. I think that on my best day, I could have beaten, or at least potentially knew that I could have beaten. So I had a bad feeling about it. So I took the whole year off. I knew I had to get bigger. And I remember Matt Porter, because he was coaching me at the time in June of 2018. He told me, he said, your silhouette of your physique is not that shapely. If you were to black out your whole body of all the cuts and everything like that, it's not pretty. He said, you're going to have to get very, very big. Like, and he referenced Dusty Hanshaw. He said Dusty was not that good when he was a heavyweight. Once he broke into the super heavyweights is when he turned pro, and he almost like filled in the gaps a little bit more with more muscle, and it took away from his not so pretty shape, or it enhanced his not so pretty shape.
Sure.
And he was that's what you're going to have to do, you know. And at that time, so I knew going after that, I said I'm going to take some time off. I competed 4 seasons in a row. My wife was burnt out. She's a big supporter, but I knew that it was time to give her a break because, like, you know, we had the kid and you know, she's balancing, helping me and everything like that, that it would be a logical thing to give her some time off. And then with a year off, she'll be recharged for the 2020 season and be able to come guns blazing as well.
And have forgotten how terrible the experience is to win.
Yeah, right. She would say that. But yeah, and we bought a house in the time in late 2018. So
right on.
Getting all those things squared away. Yeah, so it was a lot. Everything kind of came forward at the same time. However, it was tough watching the USAs, watching you know, North Americans and Nationals and everything like that. You know, because I'm eager. I wanted to get in. I don't think that the judges ever really knew who I was. So it's not like they forgot about me. I just, you know, I know that I had a decent following on Instagram and people knew what I looked like before. Mm-hmm. And that difference now is pretty drastic. So that was kind of like an eye opener for, you know, people. I think that the same thing will happen with the judges, you know, pending everything goes good with the contest prep. I'm hoping that it'll be something nice.
So you're a guy who's like, you know, 300 plus pounds at this point, you're going to be dieting down, and you obviously goal is that you want to turn pro at this thing this next year. But you don't have, I guess what I'm getting at here is I see you as kind of an underdog. You don't have the attention or the fanfare that some guys will have going into this show is kind of what I'm gathering from you. At the same time, I feel like, you know, like Jay Cutler, I feel like he thrived as an underdog. And I feel like you kind of, can you talk to me a little bit about that? Because I feel like you've got a little bit of that same mentality going on for you.
Yeah, I've pretty much my whole life have felt like an underdog. I was always I've always been good at things I do, you know, and got respect for that. But I was never thought to be great at it. Huh. Like, for example, just in high school baseball, I was very good at baseball, played on varsity, you know, everything like that. However, it wasn't my name that was in the paper, or it wasn't my name that was picked for the captain. It was, and then consequently after that, I turned on like a rage in me, and I outperformed the guys that were picked for captain. I ended up being the best pitcher on the team, the best hitter on the team. And that's fine. That's you know, your actions are dictating the respect that you should get rather than, you know, predictions. I always felt it kind of odd that no one would consider me. So the same thing happened in bodybuilding. I always believed that I would be good. You know, a lot of people, it didn't. And I took a lot of shit early on in my career, you know, on forums. And I can't tell you about how many forums on getbig.com, YouTube, I've gotten slammed for. You know, it's just something that you develop a thick skin with that. You know, and you just don't, you learn to accept your role and then utilize that for fuel.
Huh.
You know, the underdog role really motivates me to take it to a new level. If I have a workout that's exceptionally strong, you know, in my head I might say, no one's doing it like that, and because of it, and you look the way that you look because you're doing that, the work that nobody else is doing. Something like that along those lines. Whereas I think that some people who become favorites, so to speak, in, you know, in their field, they tend to like lay back on that, you know, and
yeah,
you know, in our sport, we say genetics, and we see very rarely do you see a genetic freak that works really hard. They might think that they do, but they do take their gifts for granted. You know, in terms of other sports, I mean, I can reference Conor McGregor. When he got to the top, he really laid down. He was not hungry anymore. You know, it wasn't the same guy that was like, you know, on who was on welfare with the world stacked against him. You know, he was a different person. He wasn't as hungry as a fighter. And I think that, you know, this whole thing for me being an underdog kind of really makes you hungry towards what, you know, it's a chip on your shoulder. And yeah. I utilize that chip on my shoulder to, you know, to really put my best effort forward.
I feel like, yeah, man, I mean, you got to have something, because if you're sitting there with this gigantic meal and you've got to reheat it twice just to get through it. I mean, you've got to have, I mean, that's the hard thing, I think, is to stay motivated. You know, it's like you and I, we can have this conversation, and I feel like a lot of people could walk away from it feeling like really pumped up and like, yeah, I want to make the most out of this next off season. You know, I mean, right now, where are we? We're recording this in January. Anybody who's listening to this has a lot of time to make some progress this year, this season, but then actually going off and doing that the day to day and actually following through, man, that's a different story, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's, people ask you like, you know, why, how do you stay on point like that? I mean, I really don't screw up. I really don't. It's a priorities, and it's definitely a priority thing. It's a consistency thing for sure. I can't tell you how many people message me in my DMs and could you just give me some psycho advice? And I'm like, dude, it's consistency. I'm like, the drugs I take, you know, help. They're not astronomical, but you know, it's my uncanny ability to be consistent. And people say, well, how do you be that consistent? What, when nobody's looking, how do you hold yourself accountable to do that? And I said, honestly, I can't look at myself in the mirror if I sold myself short. There are many times when I looked at like that last piece of egg and I was like, man, I don't want to eat that. And I'm like, and I'll reference somebody I know who's going to be competing in the show and say, so-and-so would eat that egg if you wanted to win. If you don't eat that egg, you'll go to that show and you'll lose. You'll take second.
Yeah.
So that's, I kind of just hold myself with these like hypothetical situations and, you know, just holding myself accountable. I already know the chips are stacked against me. So why am I going to cheat myself out of any chance of doing well by, you know, like not doing it? Just do it and see where it plays out.
I feel like it's almost like a negative thing in a way. You know, it's almost like it's almost like you're playing off your own insecurity, you know, feeling like, you know, like that I'm not good enough, so I need to prove it. But I mean, I feel like we all, I think, man, at least I can speak for myself, and I know that I think that was at least a really huge part of like me finding bodybuilding was me being able to challenge myself and prove things to myself, you know, you know, and then I guess at the end of the day too, using that to take myself further than I would have possibly been able to otherwise. I don't know what I would have done had I not had that chip, you know?
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's just kind of like everybody has their approach. I don't know if I would be the same guy if I was just blessed genetically and, you know, all my shows were first, you know, and I didn't have, like, I never got my ass kicked like I've done, you know, first like three shows. You know, it's just like you learn those life lessons for a reason. Yeah. At some point it comes to the point where you have to learn how to harness it. And that came with maturity for me was, okay, don't be somebody you're not. You're not going to be seen as Flex Wheeler. You know, you're never going to be seen as the next big thing. That's fine. Take what you can and then amplify that. Use the fuel that's available to you. And that's kind of how I just, you know, took it. So that's how I'm going into this show. You know, it was, I don't expect to be hyped up. I don't expect to be talked about. I might mention that I'm going to be competing just when people start discussing, but I don't expect anyone to make any grand predictions about me. I will show you what I'm planning on doing, what's been going on in my head when we get there, hopefully.
What's your biggest challenge right now? Like, you know, as of, say, this week, what's your biggest challenge to stay that 100%?
The biggest challenge is, I'd say, just not becoming frustrated. I want to be lean right now. So when you want to be lean, you kind of look at your off season body like, I'm fat.
Yeah.
I just consulted with a coach, and he saw my picture. He goes, you're not as sloppy as you think. It's a lot of water.
Hmm.
He goes, that's fine. It's a lot of water. He goes, you don't have as much. You have fat, but you don't have as much fat as you think you do. Because I came into it like, yeah, this is where I'm at in off season, and when you want to be lean, you see that as like, dude, I am fat as shit right now.
That's
any bodybuilder. That's our insecurity. That's social media, calling out and showing us like everybody's highlight reels. You know, with the social media world, everybody's trying to stay shredded. They got these off seasons going where these guys are 5 pounds above their show weight, and then they're preaching that it's the right way to do it. So my biggest issue right now is getting out of my own head, realizing everything's fine. My strength's going up, my training is fine, it's progressing, especially leg training.
Yeah.
Leg training has been my most successful training. I train with a partner who's been pushing me to the limits. Nice. I mean, like, after you're done with those training sessions, it's like a whirlwind happened. And I think that's going to be the biggest improvements when I get on stage is my legs, which always sucked. I remember Sean Ray wrote in the 2010 Junior Nationals on MD, he wrote, he called me like stick legs or something, no legs or something like that. So, you read that shit. And like I said, just things like that. A guy like Sean Ray would never say that a guy like me is worth his salt in anything. But I take it and I remember that when I go to the gym and I utilize it. So, I mean, that's part of, just having the thick skin to, utilize this stuff and push it off, because it can't affect you. The better you get, the more shit people are going to talk, the more they're going to criticize you. I'm sure that people that probably call me fat if they watch this damn freaking podcast. Whatever. Fuck you.
Well, how many of them are 300 pounds, though, too? There's that.
Yeah. Well, they would say, well, he's 300 pounds of fat. He goes, the guy would be 240 if he didn't have any. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see about that when I diet.
Well, I'm looking forward to that, man. Yeah, no, I totally get that struggle, too. And I feel like then when you start dieting, it's the opposite. When you're in the off season, you're fat. And then when you're contest lean, you're small. It's like, I can't wait to get back to putting on size again.
I remember a lot of times you look at your contest stuff, like during the contest, like, dude, I'm still fat. And you look back at it now when you're in the off season, you're like, holy shit, I was shredded. I'm like, I can't believe I thought that was fat, because you become overcritical. We're extremists. There's no way around that. We are extremists, some worse than others, but we just want to go to the pinnacle of it. I mean, people screw up peaks all the time because they think they're not lean enough. And if they just stayed exactly what they did, they probably would win the show, but they always want to drag that down one iota, lower body fat or one, a little bit more water pull out, and they screw up everything. And that's like, their own like crutch almost.
Sure. So tell me a little bit about this leg training. What's going on with that?
Okay. Hang on 1 second. Dry mouth. Basically the whole off season I've been utilizing, I haven't squatted, which I know for the dogma people that like are must squat, ass to grass, that's the only way for big legs. Listen, I tried that for years. One, I wasn't that hardcore into it. And two, I don't think that it was not hitting my quads. Consequently, I always had pretty bad legs. They were at least behind my upper body. This year I discovered the reverse band hack squats, and I've done that every single session in a progressive overload fashion. My knees didn't hurt when I was doing it. Didn't catch you at the bottom. And I just felt all the stress on the outer sweep, which is somewhere that I needed a lot of help with. I just never had the legs that create the X frame like that.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
It's funny you mentioned hack squats because it's something that's I've kind of discovered them just this year. I was talking to Matt Schmidt, who just won his pro card back at Nationals. He just started getting into them too. And both of us kind of felt the same way. The way he put it was, he said he felt like he wasn't good at them. And so that kind of, I think it irritated him. And so he decided he wanted to get good at hack squats. And I'll tell you, man, it's an uncomfortable movement. You know, it's not an easy machine. It's not like hopping into like one of those hammer strength leg presses where you can just load it up and you're fine. But last time I trained legs, I think it was 4 days ago now, my legs are still sore just sitting here. I can feel it.
Yeah.
So you're using a reverse band with it. So that's taking a little bit of tension off at the bottom and helping a little bit with your lower back and helping you in the hole, huh?
Yeah, and that's the real reason. As I always didn't like to do hack squat because I felt like my knees were going to explode at the bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
When you had the heavier weight. So I would always utilize lighter weight, and okay, well, that's fine. But I was able to progress and use the bands to like catch me in the bottom, but I had to power through. And we go up to – I did 11 reps with 8 plates on Monday. And that was pretty much a failure set.
Yeah.
And it just like, you know, that's just what's been killing it for me. I've done it every time. And the other thing I've also done this year of legs, was direct glute work. I have a glute portion of my leg training. It's only 2 exercises. For sure it's going to be an RDL. I'm sorry, RDLs is with hamstrings. It's going to be either a landmine squat, which is like kind of facing in on a T-bar row bar. You load the plates up. You use the handle that you'd use for back, and you kind of scoop the bar. It's almost like a goblet squat, but it's it's on a landmine type thing. That kills my glutes.
Good,
That kills my glutes. I utilize glute thrusters on a Smith machine, which kills it also. So I never did any of that stuff. I was still under the impression from years that squats were enough for striated glutes. Not for me. I watched my glutes diet off to like absolutely nothing on stage every year.
It's funny, man. That's my exact other – that's the 2 things I've been focusing on with legs. I don't think any of us were taught to do glute training 10 years ago, you know?
No. It might have worked for some people that just have that mechanical squat, you know, and squats will work for them, but – at some point you need to find out, we always say, find the exercise that works well for you, you know, and we don't really chastise people for not barbell benching.
Yeah.
And it's fine. Barbell benching sucks. You tear your pec all the time, but we don't chastise people. But the second they would say, oh, you don't squat. Oh, you're a pussy. I'm like, that, come on. You gotta get out of that same, you know, living like that, because it's not true. My hack squats put me into the ground. It's just a different target. It works for me. It might not work for you. It's something I've discovered of 13 years of training that work well. So why am I not going to do it if it's working? You know, my legs have grown inches. I mean, like probably almost from last off season. Honestly, probably 5 inches. They probably put. I'm not lying. So it's different, and it's going to look different when I've always had bad legs, but I have a weird feeling that if they hang around during the diet phase, it might be one of my better body parts.
Well, it's one of those things too. I feel like, you know, it's not crazy talk to think that you could bring them up dramatically if you weren't activating them properly before. You know sure. what I mean? If you're doing squats and all it's doing is hitting your hips, hitting your lower back, you know, then yeah, man, you move to a movement. Because I feel like I've gotten the same thing with glutes. Like, I got no activation in my glutes for anything I did, so they didn't mm-hmm. want to fire properly. And then I start yeah. working glute activity into, you know, my routine. And lo and behold, 5 months later, I've actually got, you know, an ass finally for the first time in my life. I'm not just like the white guy, you know, with the flat butt.
Yep. Yeah. It's just the exercise selection is crazy. It makes it a little harder to find training partners because, you know, my training partner, he's a bodybuilder also. He's very, very particular about what he's doing and how he's doing. That's great. He's great at, like, you know, pulling intensity, saying, well, we need to get intense, you know, stuff like that. But he prefers, he does the hack squat, but his main movement for quads is overloading the leg press. I was doing that for a little while, and I realized, I'm like, it just feels like, you know, my knees are going to blow out, or it's like, I'm like, I could do it, but it's not the right thing. And I did lunges instead. I did Bulgarian split squats instead, and they killed it. So we had to coordinate our workout so that we would land on hack squats together. And it's split off for the other things. It's not like a follow the leader type thing. We're both training for shows, and both of our shows are important. Yeah. So we need to be doing everything, the right stuff that we do. Obviously the other guy comes over and spots you to make sure that everything goes right. And you're pushed to the limit. So it wasn't with him and I, it's not a Dorian and Leroy type thing. So I'm pretty sure Leroy was just doing what Dorian did.
Sure.
Dorian was the first, priority there, and with us it's a 50-50 thing. So you know, he'll branch off for his leg things. For the most part, we do hamstrings together. Like I said, even switching out, I like the landmine squats. He hates them. He says, I don't feel any of this shit. I feel it in my hamstrings. He goes, he'd rather do a certain kind of glute thruster that I don't like to do. So, you know, it's kind of just picking up, but it's been working. And I've noticed since training with him, you know, significant pumps. It didn't come up an inch, because him and I have only been together for about, I want to say, 3 months. Yeah, I don't think you can put an inch on in your legs in 3 months, but an inch is big.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
When people say, like, I can't wait to get my biceps to 23 inches. I'm like, dude. Yeah. Do you know how long it takes to, like, get, like, 1 inch down? I'm like, you're just throwing numbers at here, man.
Yeah, I just want them to look better. You know what I mean? That's all I try to focus on. So how often do you train legs then?
One day a week. And that's another big thing that I changed from last offseason. I used to be the quads on Monday, hamstrings on Thursday type guy, split with everything else in between. Yeah. And my buddy Frank, who's the, you know, guy who's helped me on my trainer, he said, I only want you to do it on Monday. I want you to do everything. I want you to pick the most important things. He goes, the workout will be a little bit longer, you know, because you'll be slower towards the end. You'll be tired.
Yeah.
But you have 6 days to recover after that.
Yeah.
6 days of not touching lower body besides calves, but no hamstrings, no nothing. So a lot of people that say, I'm going to do a hamstring-focused workout today, and then they go, and on Thursday I'm going to do a quad-focused workout. Well, your hamstrings are still going to get some work when you're leg pressing for quads.
Sure.
So they're not resting. So you're not getting recovery. Now, if somebody is able to recover in that time frame, then more power to them to train more frequently. I cannot, even with, you know, performance enhancing drugs.
Yeah.
I've done that for years, and usually by the second leg day, I was like, fuck this, I don't feel like doing this. I couldn't get a pump. I definitely didn't want to push weight. And then that's just a clear sign of you're not recovered. But, you know, for now, I go all in on a leg day, and I know, I said, don't have to worry about that till next Monday. And then you just recover and it's ready to go. So a lot of times I have a couple clients that, you know, they want to bring their back up. Like, how many times should I do it? 2-3 times a week? I'm like, dude, do it once and do it with more intensity. I said, I try to take away volume. You know, and that's just something that I had to learn through experience by trusting somebody else. You know, I've been friends with my friend Frank for over a decade. You know, he's always been a bodybuilder. That's how we met. And he it was just such a long off season. He saw me struggling a little bit, and he was like, just let me, he was just trust me for a little bit. He had a long off season. He goes, if it doesn't work out, you know, we still have a long off season.
Yeah.
So I did it, and it worked. And I'm like, all right, I'll keep listening. And I kept going and going. And then you learn a few things by trying, you know, some, you know, different things compared to the same thing that you're stuck in your own ways. I used to always train 5 to 6 days a week. And I thought that was the way, you know, and I was afraid to branch out to 4 days. I only train 4 days right now.
Okay.
That was a huge thing. I'm like, you know, it was like, well, Dorian trained 4 days. I'm like, well, I don't know. I got to be in the gym more. And, you know, that's stupid. And 4 days has worked well for me.
Yeah, that's a tough one to break, man. And I mean, today was a non-training day for me. I still went in to do cardio and like stretching. And there's that itch. It's like, well, I want to train. But I mean, I knew that my body needed to have a break today. So, you know, you said you're trying to use the least amount of volume to get the most done. When we talk about that hack squat, I'm going to go back to that. How many working sets are you doing on something like that?
I usually go by total sets when I write everything down before I go into the gym.
Okay.
I'll write down 5 sets. That means with the band, I'll start three plates for like 10.
Okay.
5 plates for 10. Then when I get to 6 plates, I'll do that for like 6. This is what I did last on Monday. 7 plates, yeah. I call a potentiating set, and then I'll do only 2 to 3 reps of that. And then I'll take like a 2-minute break because I know that the top set is going to be 8 plates, and I know that you're going to need a break. You don't want to burn yourself out with the 7 plates. You're doing it for 15 reps. And then you got to go to near failure. Or at least mechanical failure, where your form starts to break down and you got to rack it. With that kind of, I know a lot of people like to bottom the hack squat out and like crawl out from it. But if you go down with that kind of weight in the wrong mechanical fashion, you're gonna tear something. And then guess what? It's all for nothing. So once I feel that either I'm slowing, like I'm like getting like grinders out, or I feel that my form is just getting like whacked out. It's losing its form. I'm not being tight anymore. I just rack it, you know, and usually by that time, just knowing I'll be past what I did the week before.
Okay.
Like last week I did, I think, 8 or 9 reps at 8 plates, and I did 11 on Monday. So that's a productive time.
Okay. So we're looking to see legs improve here. Obviously you're trying to grow overall. You know, just while we're talking training, what do you find to be like the most uncomfortable thing for you to train, the thing you like the least at this moment? And I'm just curious, just picking your brain here.
Trying to think here. I'd say, I mean, there's nothing I don't like to train. I get the most worrisome on leg day.
Ah, okay.
Just because I know that you're going to play with fire on this.
Yeah.
Every day after leg day, I like thank God that I survived without, you know, an injury or something like that. I got an even better one though. Chest. I have a pec tear. It happened in 2009. It was before my 21st birthday, before I ever considered being a bodybuilder. Huh. But I also progressively overload on flat dumbbell press. It's something I'm pretty good at. It's something I like to do. You know, the most I've done on that was a few months ago. I did 160s for 9 on flat dumbbell. And then I went to the 180s and tried to load them up, and my bicep popped, like the connection. So I dropped them immediate. I rested it for 2 weeks and I was okay. But it just seems that could be a problem area. I've pulled the other pec before doing so. I don't do any barbell stuff. No incline barbell. No, definitely no flat barbell. I just find that injuries come to chest often, and it's always some guy who wants to push weight on the barbell. It's restrictive. And hang on 1 second.
Yep.
You good? Sorry about that.
Yep.
Somebody tried to call on my phone. It's restrictive, and it basically just, I don't know exactly why, but it puts your chest in a bad angle that can make it very vulnerable for a tear. But I use dumbbells, and things can happen with that. And I just pray that nothing happens to me, you know, when I'm doing that. I also don't want to leave the gym with fuel still in the tank. I want to empty it to the best of my ability. So I will work up to certain things and see how we feel. You know, if I hit the 130s on chest, I'm like, yeah, I felt light. All right, and we can proceed forward. But if it doesn't feel good that day, I'm going to leave it alone. You know, I might go to like the hammer strength or something like that and just finish it off, or do like a back off set, something like that. But right, it's just not something. It's not something that I just, you know, you lift 0 pounds and you look like shit when it tears something. So don't do it.
Okay. Now, are you specifically through Animal, or can I say Universal, or how does that work?
Universal is the whole parent company. Okay. And of course, it's its own brand too. Animal is one of the brother brands, and of course, it's probably our most well known.
Yeah.
I work in the office. I do all the writing, you know, social media writing. I do some marketing for them. You know, do some of the phones and stuff like that. And other than that, I'm also sponsored as an athlete. So it's like a dual role. A lot of people wear, you know, different hats here, you know, yeah, some coincide. But, you know, the first step was I got hired here just as an employee. Then it branched off into a bodybuilder. But I come to work every day. I drive, you know, 80 to 90 minutes from my house each way to get here. And I do it because I like it here.
That's cool, man.
You know, I've tried working other jobs that were outside the industry and whatnot, and it just was stuff that wasn't my interest. And yeah, I remember, say, on the first day, I'm like, I fucking hate this.
Yeah.
I'm like, so, you know, I'll drive the little bit longer to get here. I really enjoy the people here and, you know, what we do. It's exactly what I love to do. So pretty much all my day is bodybuilding all day long.
That's cool, man. I feel like Universal and especially Animal, you guys really, you really do love, you know, what the heart of bodybuilding is. Do you guys still do like lifts and stuff like that where everybody gets together and trains?
Yep. Oh yeah, I actually run those. That's called
kidding.
That's called an ABC or Animal Barbell Club. That's what ABC stands for.
Right.
So you know, it's all that is like-minded individuals that get together in a specific gym that looks like Animal Gym, you know, hardcore gym and whatnot. And we don't lift all together. People get that confused. They think, are you guys deadlifting together? I'm like, you can, but it's honestly just people just lifting or doing whatever. They partner up or they go alone.
Yeah.
You know, we give out shirts, samples. It's just like-minded individuals that love the brand, that love bodybuilding. They're just trying to clang and bang together. So that's what it kind of is. And if anybody's listening, shoot me an email at GaryT@UniversalNutrition.com. Maybe we can come to your gym. So
that's cool. That's cool. Do you guys normally stick toward like East Coast area, or how does that work?
It does, but we do just because we have the resources out here. I would go to that. If we're ever in the area, like we got one coming up in our national ABCs at the Arnold.
So nice.
That's going to be at Power Shack in Grove City, Ohio, which is probably about 20 minutes from the Expo Center. And we do a giant one. We feed you. You get all the, you know, we give you samples and everything like that. It's probably gonna be about 200 people there. Nice. And that's going to be on Saturday from 7 to 9. So, but that's the big one. We got some reps and athletes out on the West Coast. They'll put on some ABCs and stuff like that as they go. You know, and it goes, you know, there's usually an average somewhere one, maybe two a month.
That's cool, man.
Wherever we go, we try to make it accommodating so we can meet as many fans as we can.
That's cool. Yeah, I feel like I think for all of us, man, I remember looking back at those ads, you know, in the magazines and just feeling like that was a company that I could connect with. And, you know, when we were talking about feeling like you're an underdog and kind of feeding off of that, I felt like that there's a vibe that Animal gets. And you now you're responsible for writing a bunch of that stuff, huh?
Well, the funny thing is that when people don't know, and I explain that I do the writing, I said, if you go to my personal Instagram, it'll sound a lot like, you know, certain posts will sound a lot like Animal. I said, because I'm not faking it.
Yeah.
I said, I'm just writing, if I'm writing on Animal's account, I'm just writing something that I normally would feel. Something that came up in my head. I'm not acting. I'm not being a poser. You know, I'm not a ghost writer. You know, it's just, they're congruent with my own beliefs. So that's why it works out so well. It's just, you know, Animal is founded on the average, you know, the underdog guy, the hardcore guy in the dungeon gym that nobody knows his name, nobody knows he's down there, and he's just training his balls off. He wants no accolades, he wants no trophies, and it's all the glitz and glam is thrown out the window. the tattered clothes and stuff. And I think that in this day and age, we really need that more than ever, because we've gotten so fancy spancy in this. And, you know, we have energy drink companies making the expos look like raves and stuff. And I think the industry as a whole just got soft. Nobody wants to be jacked anymore. I mean, I think we really need to take a step back and go back to the roots that we once were. And I think there's a lot of people that out there that would appreciate that nowadays.
Yeah, I think so, man. I feel like a lot of our listeners appreciate it. I feel like that's what they've liked out of hearing you talk, man. You know, it's you know, there is something to be said, I guess, that, you know, all the bikini girls and stuff, it brings money to the industry. But at the same time, I mean, if that's all it was, I don't feel like that I would love the sport anymore, you know?
Yeah. Hey, listen, the bikini girls look good. But don't let them ever tell you they train just as hard as us.
All right. Well, I really appreciate your time, Gary. And I'll look forward to talking to you again in the future, brother.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, for another episode here at Think Big Bodybuilding Media and Advices Radio, we've got super heavyweight Gary Turner. We will see you soon. Thanks, Gary.
You're welcome.